order. Today is Tuesday, March 18th, 2014. The time is 9:02 a.m. Committee members present today, Senator Coghill, Senator Wilkowski, and myself, Vice Chair Giesel. Chairman Dyson will be along shortly. He has a bill before Senate Finance right now, and so is tied up doing that. Keeping the record of this meeting this morning is Chris Dickrell, managing our audio, Kathleen Nyson, and committee staff Joshua Banks is here helping us. So on the agenda today, we have three items. SCR 17, the 150th anniversary of the Alaska State Purchase, SB 206, Vehicle Registration Licensing Accident Reports, and SB 174, Leases for Legislative Office Space. We'll take the items in that order. So we'll start out with SCR 17. The bill sponsor is Senator McGuire. Presenting her bill today is her staff. So welcome.
Thank you. Erin Hansen, staff for Senator McGuire. And I apologize that Senator McGuire was unable to be here today. She thanks the committee for hearing the resolution, and I'd be happy to explain the resolution.
Please do.
All right. Senate Concurrent Resolution 17 is a resolution commemorating the 150th anniversary of the purchase of Alaska for $7,200,000, urging Alaskan communities to plan activities and events in 2017 to commemorate the Alaska purchase, requesting that the Alaska Historical Commission coordinate events, and inviting Alaska communities, schools, universities, libraries, museums, businesses, civic and historical groups, and government agencies to participate in and support commemorative activities and events. As Alaskans, we all share a unique and special pride in our great state, from our rich Alaskan Native heritage to our unparalleled natural resources, our majestic landscapes to our diverse communities, full of some of the most caring and resilient people in the country. This resolution gives us the opportunity to reflect on the history of Alaska under the American flag and share with the rest of the nation what makes our state so strong. The United States purchased Alaska from Russia in 1867 for $7.2 million, or about 2 cents an acre. The 150th anniversary of the purchase is an ideal opportunity for all Alaskans to celebrate our state's remarkable history. SCR 17 recognizes the historic significance of the anniversary of the purchase and encourages all Alaskan communities to participate in celebrations statewide. And this resolution does come with a zero fiscal note. And if the committee has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I also have Barbara Propes here from Lieutenant Governor's Office if there's any questions about the Alaska Historical Commission.
Great. Thank you, Erin. Committee members, any questions for Erin? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Not a question, just a comment, Madam Chair. I learned a new word with this resolution. Sesquicentennial.
It's a mouthful.
150th anniversary. Thank you.
Yes. Great. Any other questions?
Thank the Senator for saying it out loud so that I could say it. Madam Chair, if I'm...
Yes, Senator Coghill.
First of all, thanks for bringing this forward. It, you know, because of the different titles that have been kind of divvied up in Alaska from the time of the purchase till now, I think it's going to be very important that Alaskans begin to look at it from the time of purchase till now, because we do sometimes, when we became a state, we were granted the 104 million acres or somewhere around that neighborhood, and you know, we've work diligently to take our responsibility as a state. There's no doubt about it. But the fact is, this was purchased by the federal government. It's probably one of the largest pieces of geography on the face of the earth that was actually purchased and not done with bloodshed. So it's kind of an interesting history. So thanks for bringing it forward. I think it'll generate a lot of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I hope you'll do a YouTube on that. No, really, that's an interesting perspective. That's great. Any other questions? All right. Anyone else you'd like to have present, Erin, on this?
If Barbara has anything she'd like to add about the role of the Alaska...
Would the Lieutenant Governor's Office like to add anything?
No, I guess the commission has been working on this already.
Thank you. The commission has been working.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Barbara Probes from the Lieutenant Governor's Office. And the commission has been working on this and has been gaining support and interest across the state, and we're working a lot with the Native communities, too, because we know that besides just celebrations, there will be commemorations, and we really want to make sure that all sides are heard and recognized, and it becomes an important dialogue. We're also reaching out to Seattle and to other states that were affected by our state, so we hope that this can have a national appeal as well. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions for Ms. Probst? Yes, Senator Coghill.
Thank you. Been working on it. So is there a place, is there a way that if we pass this resolution, we can point people to? Should it be the Lieutenant Governor's office? Should it be the libraries, the university? Who should we point people to?
To the Alaska Historical Commission. By statute, the Lieutenant Governor serves on that commission. He is currently the chair, and then through archaeology, through Department of Natural Resources, so the Alaska Historical Commission.
All right. I'm going to have to get that on one of my favorites on the computer so that I can send people your way, because I think this is going to be an interesting discussion. And like I said previously, try to get people involved in a discussion to know a little bit of the history so that as we begin to work on some of the issues that are, present-day issues, you can do it from a good historical perspective. So I think this is great.
And I'm the current point of contact.
Okay, good.
Very good. Further questions? Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to offer public testimony on the resolution? Okay, seeing none. Kathleen, anyone online? All right, so we'll close public testimony. So at this time, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that we move Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 17 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached a zero fiscal note.
Very good. Any objections? Seeing none, the resolution moves. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the transmittal documents. The next bill up will be Senate Bill 206. Bill before us is Senate Bill 206. The bill sponsor is Senator Michicki. So welcome, Senator Michicki, and faithful staff member. I'll let you go ahead and present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, this morning. And for the record, Senator Peter Michicki.
And I'm Larry Simmons, staff to Senator Michicki.
And we're here to want to thank you for hearing Senate Bill 206, an act relating to motor vehicle legislation and fees relating to licensing of school bus drivers and related to notice of an accident involving a motor vehicle. And primarily what this bill is about is sort of a vision of mine. And so think about this. If you're a fairly typical homeowner or small business owner in Alaska, you've got the primary vehicles, you've got a couple boats, you've got the trailers, you've got things that service your small business. And these things show up in the mail, and it's just a cumbersome process to renew your registrations and license fees and driver's licenses. So what my vision is that you go on to your My Alaska DMV page. You see all of your items laid out there, and you can identify which ones are coming up that are late. You can click on those items. You can drop them into your shopping cart. You can pay through bill pay or something, you know, the way we do everything else online. It's extremely inefficient. This bill allows the DMV to use internet technology for a substantive increase in efficiency for Alaskan customers. And my vision in the long term is a fairly dramatic cost reduction for operations as we automate those processes. This bill also places into statute the $10 service fee for in-person vehicle renewals. The DMV's practice has been to extend the $10 fee waiver. This codifies that waiver. It also allows DMV to receive accident reports from law enforcement agencies. Currently, they're supposed to be written reports. Now they can get that information out from the road. Troopers have Most officers also have a computer on board. They can fill out an electronic report and get it right to the agencies immediately. And it also modifies the statutes governing the licensing process for school bus drivers. Today, there are folks that are allowed to drive school buses that perhaps one could challenge shouldn't be left alone with young children. And this places some sideboards on who can be a school bus driver in the state. So I hope you can support this legislation. With us today, we have representatives from DMV. We have Amy Erickson here from DMV and the Department of Public Safety, and Annie Carpinetti with the Department of Law. This bill has a zero fiscal note. If the committee in your discussion feels that there's some adjustments that can help on the school bus driver requirements, certainly we recognize that those can be sharpened up a little bit. I think Chairman Dyson was aware of some of those issues. So with that, I'm here for questions.
Very good. Mr. Simmons, do you want to take us through any kind of sectional? Do you have anything to add?
There is a sectional analysis in the in your packet, but honestly, if there are questions that are technical, particularly having to do with the licensing requirements, representatives from the department are here to answer those.
Great. I do see Amy Erickson is present in the room. Also online, we have two folks from DMV, Tiffany Thomas and Joanne Olson, for questions, and Lieutenant Rodney Dial from the State Troopers is also online. So questions from the committee for the bill sponsor or Mr. Simmons? Yes, Senator Wielichowski.
Thank you. I appreciate the portion, at least, that allows people to renew by web, by the internet. I think that's long overdue. One question I have is just regarding photographs, and I'm just looking at Section 8 of the sectional. It says amends the statute to allow eligible DMV customers to renew their licenses by using DMV's website. And my understanding is for a renewal you have to have a photograph, or maybe I'm wrong on that. And maybe we can hear from DMV on that. She's jumping in the back there.
We can, yes.
All right.
I'll stick around in case there are any other sponsored questions.
Great.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Amy Erickson from the Division of Motor Vehicles. Through the Chair, Senator Wielichowski, you don't necessarily have to have a photograph on a file. We do have a process for a ballot without photo. And those people can, in, often in the rural communities where there's no DMV services, will send in their original documents to us, birth certificate, you know, documents that show their date of birth and their identity. And we can issue a ballot without photo license. And for a renewal, and in a valid without photo license, I'd actually need to ask Tiffany Thomas from our driver licensing whether we renew valid without photos or if they, again, have to submit the paperwork. But the process for renewing now, if you haven't last renewed online, you can do so again, and we use your photograph that was used last time.
Yes, Senator Wielichowski, do you want to go to Tiffany Thomas online about your question on the photo?
I'm just curious how the process will work for driver's licenses renewals, particularly photographs and documentation. I know there's you have requirements for birth certificates or passports, and I'm just curious how that's going to work via the internet, if people will be able to scan those in and send those, or if they'll have to mail them in, or we're just curious how the process is going to work, and then the photographs issue. So I'd be curious to hear how that all is
through
planned.
The Chair, Senator Wielichowski, this will be for renewals only, so they will have established their identity already, and so the photograph will have been on file, and so will all of the documents. We would have already inspected them to have a record on file.
And is there a limit on how many years you can keep your photo on file? I guess you renew your license every 5 years. Could you have the same photo for 30 years?
Through the Chair, no. You can only use it. It's good for 10 years, basically. So you get your license today, it's good for 5 years, and you're able to renew once more, which is another 5 years.
And then after that, you'd have to come back?
Yes.
Okay, into the DMV.
Yes.
Okay. If I may, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Michiki.
I just, you know, if you think about all the services that you do at DMV, my vision has more to do with the things that you do every day than driver's license renewals. I think renewals is a nice added feature. But when I think of what my DMV account looks like, or the typical small business, or even fleet managers in a large business, it would create an efficiency that just isn't there today for the many vehicles that they manage, or trailers, or pieces of equipment.
Very good. Why don't we go to Tiffany Thomas online? Ms. Thomas, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can.
Great. Do you want to elaborate on the photo and other credential requirements for renewals and original licenses?
Certainly, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tiffany Thomas. I'm the driver licensing manager for the Division of Motor Vehicles. Director Erickson actually touched on everything that I would have said regarding the validity of the photo, the valid without photo for our rural communities, and the fact that this is a renew only as opposed to an original license really makes it a simple process.
Great.
If there is a more specific question, I'm happy to answer that.
Committee members, any questions for Ms. Thomas? All right, seeing none. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Or we also have the state troopers online. Senator Coghill.
So just so I understand the process, and this is probably for DMV, the Section 1 says shall mail or deliver, and so it looks like that gives you the ability to send by email a notice. Is that the deal?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, that's correct. We'll be able to request people's email addresses and ask if they would like to be notified by email instead of by mail.
I had a question for the bill sponsor. In Section 2, Senator Machicki, small A alpha number 2, it says additional $10 fee will be added, blah, blah, blah. It says on the website, or at an emissions inspection station. So my question is, how many communities still do emission credentialing for vehicles in their area? Do you know?
My understanding is that none currently do, but it's still in the state code if a community chooses to inspect emissions.
Okay, great. And then it says, or contract office. That must be the business partnerships.
That's
okay,
correct.
All right. Great, thanks.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Probably this is just for me as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, but I've been trying to make sense of Section 4 and 5. They're repealed and reenacted. So I talked to the DMV a little bit about it last night, but if maybe the sponsor or DMV can give me kind of the high view of what is reenacted that is significantly different than what's already in statute, because I'm trying to figure that out by kind of looking it through, but I have not got to it entirely. So there's a repeal and reenactment of 2815046C and D, it looks to me like, and then a new subsection, but I'll get to that after a while. But if you could just give me what was the change in these reenactments.
I can help you with that, Senator Coghill. In Section 4, repeals and reenacts, as you said, 2815046C. This section is being repealed and reenacted to allow for restructuring of the disqualifying offenses to for a school bus driver in the state. The statute is currently written only allows the DMV to deny an application for a school bus license if a person has been convicted within a 20-year period of the following offenses: sexual abuse of a minor in any degree, assault in any degree, incest under AS 1141-450, unlawful exploitation of a minor, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, a felony involving possession of a controlled or imitation controlled substance, felony or misdemeanor involving distribution of a controlled or imitation controlled substance, sex trafficking in the first or second degree, and indecent exposure. The statute as currently written did not allow for the DMV to deny an application of a person who was convicted of a serious felony assault on an infant. The reenacted statute will significantly add to the disqualifying offenses listed above by allowing the DMV to deny a license to a person who has been convicted of right, a long list.
I see that.
What the goal for this sponsor, as a sponsor, is not to make it difficult for a nonviolent or non-sexual or non-serious drug-related person to get back into the workforce. It's simply to separate those that are driving a school bus with children from those that shouldn't be driving a school bus with children. So that's why I ask that the committee sort of looks at those infractions or felonies and decide if it's the right mix.
Senator Cog, you'll follow?
Madam Chair, I probably, before I'd be willing to vote on this moving from committee, I need just to understand that a little better. And I guess I understand the qualification level, and I understand the public safety need. So you don't get me wrong. You don't get me off. I mean, I'm okay with that. I'm just trying to understand what is new, and then I guess I'm sure that we've already got it in statute. So the question probably has already been answered, but I need to hear it again. Probably, if it's a qualification only issue, or if somebody could claim improper treatment of law for going back and reaching into another jurisdiction that maybe, I don't know if double jeopardy is the question to ask, or all I'm wondering if there's another issue of law here that I need to look into. I, being one of the non-lawyers in Judiciary Committee, I just have to understand those at the very simplest level. And so I couldn't get my arms around it, even after talking to Ms. Erickson. I'm struggling with it. And so we've already established, I think, the principle. Now I'm looking for what is new, and add that together with going from a 2-year to a 10-year look back. I'm just wondering if we're creating a new precedent, that's all.
Through the chair, yes. Senator Coghill, it's my understanding that, first of all, the reason that this is in the bill to begin with is that our driver licensing manager last summer had been going through an application of a person who had been convicted of a felony against an infant in another state. That wasn't a disqualifier for the state of Alaska because it wasn't sexual in nature. And that's where this came into play. We mentioned it to our commissioner, who brought it to the governor's attention. And so these changes were made, and it's my understanding that the offenses in this bill they mirror what is a barrier for service providers for the Department of Social Services, and with the exception of the misdemeanor prostitution, I believe. And then also we have the driving offenses, which are the DUI and refusal.
Madam Chair, I totally understand that. I don't want people who are unsafe working with the children. Because it's dealing with criminal law, I probably am going to have to ask it to go to judiciary. I know they're not too interested in it taking a longer journey. But I tried to understand it yesterday after talking to you. I'm just not there yet. And it's an honest question. I'm trying to figure out. I agree with what you're trying to do, so don't get me wrong. But traveling just outside of this particular bill is probably another 8 questions on how do we dovetail our barrier crimes with our driver's license with court mandates. And I began looking at it under the Senate Bill 64, which was looking for ways to hold people accountable but still allow driving privileges. And that's when I found out that some of these barriers were there, and some of the authority that you have is pretty significant. And I tend to agree with your barrier here, but I don't know how it fits into the whole picture yet. So that's a question I'm going to have, and I just told you a little bit more than I really know. But when I see all these criminal provisions and we're going back from 2 to 10 years, it just causes me to dig in a little deeper than I normally would have probably.
I don't see any Carpinetti in the room, but we do have. Lieutenant Dial from the State Troopers Online, would you, Lieutenant Dial, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I'm online.
Great, thank you. Do you have any comment to Senator Coghill's discussion of the legal implications here?
For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with Alaska State Troopers. And unfortunately, for those legal questions, I would have to defer to Department of Law, Ms. Carpinetti, on that.
Great, thank you. I thought that might be true, but I wanted to give you the opportunity. Senator Machicki.
Yes, Ms. Carpinetti is I don't want to say stuck in finance. She's honored to be needed in finance.
Yes.
Right now, but could help answer those questions. And Senator Coghill, I'm not sure. Happy to spend some time with you on working through this. I'd like to do it in a timely manner. We're running short. I think this is a very important bill, so I will commit the time that I need to commit to get those questions answered for you.
Yeah, for the most part, it is not a huge issue to me. It's just that because I've worked on it in probably three other venues at least, I just need to understand not only what the reenactment is, and even though you told me what you're doing, we're already doing that in law, except for the new child offense, if I remember correctly. You're adding a new offense here. And so just as somebody who sees this language, it's kind of like a legislator coming saying, well, this is just a simple bill, Mr. Chairman. It always causes me some concern, that's all. I will study it, and I'll work with you on it. I don't know that it has to go to judiciary if I can get kind of the high-level answers. But with the new crime involved here, I'm probably going to want it to go to judiciary if I think that it fits.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Machicki.
Senator Coghill, Section 4 is about protecting young children from it's a labor issue, in my view, but we're happy to chat with you about that. I will be fighting for us to not go through another year of our kids not being protected from these crimes. Section 5 is a different issue, and we can visit on those outside of committee here and hopefully get your questions answered.
I don't necessarily have to have it go to judiciary. In fact, three of the members sitting on judiciary sit on this committee, so I don't know that I have to. It's just that I need to understand it a little more thoroughly than I do right now. And Amy came and talked to me yesterday, and I kind of registered my concern, and I'm willing to look more deeply into it. But I'm not willing just to cause the bill a tougher journey. Is there another version on the other body on this?
There's not.
Right, so we've got 30 days to get this thing done.
Yes.
Basically. Or a little less than 30 days.
Sorry, Senator.
We won't be passing the bill out today, so we'll be holding it in this committee. So that'll give an opportunity for Ms. Carpinetti to be here.
I will do some. I'll do some research on it. If I can get satisfied that we can do it here, then I will work on it.
Thank you. Further questions? Here's Ms. Carpinetti now. That was fortuitous. Why don't we ask those legal questions right now? If that's all right with you, Senator Coghill. Ms. Carpinetti, welcome. We are delving into Section 4 and 5 of Senate Bill 206. And Senator Coghill has some questions for you.
My apologies, Madam Chair, and my apologies to the Department of Law, who's walked in the building trying to find what page we're on. So.
Yes, and so we'll give her a moment to catch up there. It's on page 3.
Guys helped us with in Section 4 and 5.
So we're talking about my name is Annie Carpinetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And could you say once more what you're asking me?
Section 4.
Okay.
We'll start at Section 4, and there's also questions on Section 5 from Senator Coghill. Would you like to ask again?
And Madam Chair, there's probably three issues, Annie. One of them is we're repealing and reenacting 28-1504-6 C and D, and with a new crime, I think, and then it looks like on Section 3, which is 046 B, we're going from 2 years to 10 years look back, And I just want to know kind of what the new crime is. What does the 10-year look back do to that crime? And I think I know what the purpose is. I just want to make sure that legally we're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, where do you see the 10-year look back? I'm a little confused.
On page 2, line 26.
Section 3.
Section 3.
Yes, one page back.
Okay.
Yeah, that's page page 2, line 26. They and this is under the licensing of school bus drivers.
Yes. Okay, I'm sorry.
And I think the what I heard the testimony was they found somebody who had been charged with a crime against a child in another state, and so at this point they want to go 10 years back instead of 2 years.
You know, that's an interesting change in the law, and if Kathy Monfreda is online from DPS, it would be she'd be really an interesting person to talk to, because I think this section only says the look back is to the records, not necessarily to a crime, because it says you look back at the records in which the applicant has resided for the past 10 years. It's that's just where the person has resided, not necessarily a crime that, you know, crime on the records. And I spoke with Ms. Monfreda when I was looking at this bill earlier, and she said it doesn't hurt to put the 10-year look back on the records, but you're going to get it anyway, because that information is on, if you get a fingerprint-based record, that information is going to be on there anyway. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't hurt to make it 10 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I hope I said that right, and I will ask Ms. Monfreda about it, but she's a great source of information about these records.
So at this point, Madam Chair, they actually can do this anyway, because you're going back to the National Crime Record System.
Yes, and that has all the information on it.
Anybody that you would be doing a background check on under this kind of driver's license, that information would be there. So the 10 years and the 2 years probably is not significant in that regard?
That's my understanding, yes.
All right.
Because once you get a fingerprint-based record, it's going to go all the way back.
Other questions, Senator Coghill?
This is just probably a broader question. Anytime I see repealed and reenacted, the whole section begins to change. But it looks like they're adding just a new crime. Can you highlight that for me?
Adding a new crime to this particular?
Yes, on Section 4, which is 046C.
Yes.
And I think he told me it was a child-related crime. And if I could just have that pointed out, what's the difference? It looks like they renumbered
sexual abuse of a minor is covered under the new law.
Right. But sexual abuse of a minor is covered under the old law.
Yes, but it also adds it adds attempt to do that. Attempt, solicitation, or conspiracy to commit a violation of sexual. The A is murder, homicide, assault, and various sex crimes, 1141, 360 to 530. So that adads those inchoate crimes. Endangering the welfare of a child is, I don't see that on here, so that would be an addition, I think.
And my apologies, I didn't mean to hold it up. But
sure. I'm sorry. I didn't draft this bill. I'm just trying to. I mean, I helped on drafting it, so I'm trying to compare them kind of on the fly.
And I was too. So that's why I'm apologizing.
Uh-huh. So is there any particular crime that you thought you were? I think one of the concerns was the child pornography, which were our additions. I think to this to current law is to avoid so that a person can't be a school bus driver and who has committed child pornography crimes.
Yes, Senator Machiki, did you want to add? I know you've got the list of changes.
I think we can help a little bit on under Section 4. If you look at line 11D, I'll just talk about the new listings.
Uh-huh.
And then perhaps you can help me with this, too. Is felony indecent viewing or photography under AS 1161-123, also new as distribution of child pornography, also new on line 14F, possession of child pornography, line 15, distribution of indecent material to minors under AS 1161-128, 17, felony prostitution under AS 1166-100C, if you drop down to line 22, felony violation under AS 2835030N or P.
That's felony drunk driving and felony refusal.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, and I didn't catch that earlier. So these are all new additions. I totally appropriate in my view. So
is there more, Senator Machicki?
Oh, there is, Madam Chair. If you drop down to line 27 through the chairs. A, assault in the fourth degree under AS 1141-230. Line 28, reckless endangerment under AS 1141-250. Line 29, misdemeanor prostitution under AS 1166-100A2. And line 30 and 31, a misdemeanor violation of endangering the welfare of a child in the first degree under AS 1151-100. If I may, Madam Chair, when I began talking and said I wanted you to think about a couple of the lines, the couple of the lines that I was thinking about was line 27 and line 28. I'm not sure that those meet the level of a crime that I see the remainder do in potentially endangering the welfare of a child. So it's something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Chairwoman, I would say that the provisions under C, paragraph 1, for example, the more serious crimes, those are those provide that any time a person has that conviction, no matter how old, that person will not be considered eligible for driving a school bus, having a license.
So these could be considered barrier crimes.
Yes.
Thank you.
And under paragraph 2, for example, assault in the fourth degree and reckless endangerment, those are barrier crimes for a limited time period. That is 2 years after the person has been unconditionally discharged, and that's usually a person is unconditionally discharged when their probation and parole periods are over.
Great. Okay. Senator Kalkiel, further questions?
Excellent description for me. I had missed that sub 2 was time limited to 2 years. So, okay, that helps just working my way through this. And then the other question is, I presume, since we've already got this on statute, that this barrier doesn't have other legal ramifications to it. I mean, it's a qualification level for driving where you get to be around and handle children. Mm-hmm. So there's no other legal reasons to say have somebody say, well, this is the double jeopardy, especially when we get to the fourth degree assault or anything like that.
Mr. Chairman, no. I think that this is just as the legislature's policy statements is who you think is an appropriate person to get a school bus driver license. I don't think it would be considered additional punishment.
And then Section 5 may not issue a license at the time of application. And now we're talking about DUIs, right?
Yes. Here we're talking about first and second convictions of drunk driving and refusal that don't or convictions of drunk driving and refusal that don't, for the number of years looking back, don't add up to a felony.
So we have 2, 5, and 10-year lookbacks.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Further questions, Senator Coghill?
Yes, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'm just working my way through this.
Sure.
So refusal to commit to a test is got the 10-year unconditional just. Help me understand what the 10 years and the refusal and the offense described in 283040A. I'm sorry, I should have studied that. I could not get to this fast enough. I'm sorry.
No, it's confusing, too. I have to say
Senator Baczycki, did you want to comment?
I just wanted to thank Senator. That's why we're here. It's no need for apologies. Great questions.
So a person has their first drunk driving or refusal conviction, which is a misdemeanor, so that similar to other misdemeanors on Section 4, the 2 years have to elapse from the unconditional discharge from that offense. So that's when you're off probation or parole. If it's your second drunk driving and or refusal, less than 5 years have to have elapsed, and that's under paragraph B from your second offense, and less than 10 years from unconditional discharge from the first offense. So we're looking back and talking about how recently were you convicted of drunk driving, how dangerous is that for a school bus driver to have had convictions that recently. And paragraph 2 is less than 10 years have elapsed from unconditional discharge for conviction of refusal, and 2 is these are commercial driving license violations, which are always different and more severe than regular driver's license.
And I agree generally with this, Madam Chair, and I'll defer to the other question, but along the way I need to get the answer also, what's new in this reenactment? But I'll defer to the Senator.
Senator Wilkowski?
Thank you. Under page 4, line 20, where you're talking about commercial driver's license, is the standard there 0.08 for alcohol, or is that a lower standard?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's a different standard. Drunk driving for a commercial driver is, I think, 0.04. A commercial driver cannot, under the law, have any alcohol, drink any alcohol before driving, I should say.
Senator Coghill, continue.
For handling youngsters, totally agree. And we've had some horrific accidents or crashes, it really is the better way of saying it, with whole busloads of children. So is this new section then, Section 2? Is that new?
Section 2, I think, is a redraft, and I'd have to go back and look at it. Do you know whether Section 2 is a redraft of current law? I think it's in another section of the statutes, which I'll be happy to find them for you.
Two A and B are new sections.
Right. So
with you.
I have Title 28, yes. And they're rewriting right now under 28.15.046D. It talks about felony drunk driving, actually, so that I think the purpose of this was to, separate first, second, and third and subsequent and convictions of drunk driving. So that's why this was written the way it was.
Senator Baczycki, I'm looking at your sectional analysis document that you gave us and looking at Section 5 as you wrote it here, and it does look like you've expanded the statute here to cover those additional 5 and 10 year periods, just going by your sectional analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate? That the current statute only covers the 2 year and the new statute will add to that?
The new statute will modify the 2 years period to require the DMV deny issuance of a license if less than 2 years has elapsed since the applicant's unconditional discharge from a first-time conviction, less than 5 years has elapsed from their unconditional discharge for a second conviction, or less than 10 years has elapsed from unconditional discharge from a refusal to submit to a chemical test if the offense occurred while driving a commercial motor vehicle.
Could I just add to that, Madam Chair?
Yes.
The sponsor is correct, but under the current law doesn't set it out so clearly. First one, 2 years from unconditional release, and 5 years for a second. So this makes it safer, more cautious about people who commit drunk driving and drive school buses for the second time offense.
Great. And then it appears to clarify for the commercial motor vehicle in the third, in number two,
yes.
D2.
So can I ask another question?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
So also we're taken substantially out of similar, and my guess is that is because other laws in other states, because we're looking further back, may not be exactly the same.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Coghill. Over the years, we have tried to take that term substantially, that is in front of similar, out of our statutes because it gives rise to a lot of litigation as to what substantially similar is to another state statute, and similar is enough in terms of the conduct in the past. And so this is, I look at this taking substantially out as really a housekeeping measure that will make it just much clearer for people who are enforcing the law. And, you know, this is just one of many times we've taken substantially out, because otherwise you're litigating really minutia of other state statutes.
How close is close, right?
Right.
Then the immediate cancellation, this is new to under Section 7, line 29. Mm-hmm. We are now under C and D, going to give the right for immediate cancellation. I thought they already had that ability to cancel under this.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, do you mean G and H? Or
yes.
My understanding is that it wasn't articulated in statute, and that's why it was a good thing to put it in. But that's what I understood, that there wasn't a provision there that set that out, although I think it was probably understood and enforced that way.
So probably for DMV, I would only ask, is there a communication system for the court system good enough for them to know what immediately is? So that would be probably the next question in line. So. And maybe DMV can help me understand that later on.
Sure.
Going forward, any questions on 8 or 9?
Well,
we talked about the photo already.
If I could have one other question.
Yes.
This could be for the sponsor. And I'm sorry, once again, I didn't get a chance to do a lot of homework on this last night, so I'm flying a little bit, you know, with all the dumb questions up front. The unconditional discharge in 1255-185, I have not had a chance to read that. Is that something that that's new? So help me understand how that's going to be implemented or what that means. So 1255-185.
Unconditional discharge in Section 5, or are we
yes.
back to Section?
No, Section 7.
7, at the very end. It's on page 5, line 2.
Defines unconditional discharge. Has the meaning given in AS 1255-185?
I have that definition right here. I'd be glad to read it to you if you wanted to. And it generally, I mean, I'd say it means that it's when a person is finished with probation and parole and there's nothing left that he or she has to do to report to anybody, but I can read it.
So then the way I understand this to the maker of the bill, since we have so many other things that are explicitly timed, we're saying if once they've been unconditionally discharged, then they're eligible again? Is that, I'm just...
Qualify for a license an applicant who has been convicted of an offense described in C2 or D of this section shall supply proof that is acceptable to the Department of the State of the applicant's unconditional discharge from the offense. I would assume that
And the reason for putting that in the statute, I believe, is that sometimes it's very difficult for the department to know that date. And the person who is making the application will generally have access to information that can establish that the unconditional discharge date, and then the department can apply the law as you adopt it 2 years after that date, you're qualified to apply for a license, or 10 years, you know, whatever the law says. But the person who has been unconditionally discharged has better access to that information than the state generally does. So.
A vested interest in the
yes.
Version. Yes. Senator Coghill, further follow-up?
And then just one last question. This is totally outside of the penalty issue. So this is the Section 12. What it looks like to me is the law enforcement, they're making an exception to put in paperwork instead of a website if they don't have the capacity, right? That's what I understand it.
It doesn't require, it allows. So they can use the Trax software for electronic transmission back to the department as opposed to requiring paper before.
That's how I understand it.
All right.
So the operative word is may.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes, in line 13.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around this bill, Madam Chair. And then the last thing is Section 13 is a new section. They're taking an accident report as the satisfying the requirements for remote reporting. And maybe this is for DMV, but have they had, is this a new way of doing it, or this is a new codification of how things are happening now? And maybe Amy can give us.
I would love to have DMV answer that question.
Pull up a third chair. We might as well just all kind of hang out up here for a while. Here you go.
Oh, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Coghill, it is in place now. People are required to submit their accident reports to the DMV, as are law enforcement. This is moving toward an electronic process so that everything can be done electronically and easier access for all parties involved.
And so when, now you get my curiosity up, when say you have a police officer at a crash site, because I know they're not accidents anymore, they're crashes, right? You said that yesterday, and I think that's exactly the way we ought to talk about them. But when they're putting in, say, for example, they are describing it and giving kind of a little map of the area, that's all done electronically now?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, that's where we're moving to.
Excuse me, Senator Coghill, we actually have a state trooper online that may be able to shed some light on that. Would you like to hear from him?
Yes, I would love to.
All right. Lieutenant Dial, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Great. Would you comment on the electronic submission of the reports and what your capabilities are right now? Identifying yourself for the record, please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Rodney Dial, Lieutenant with the state troopers. And part of this legislation that impacts the department is this section that allows the electronic transfer of crash reporting information. Currently, about three dozen Alaska law enforcement agencies are using a program called TRAX. It stands for Traffic and Criminal Software, Electronic Crash Reporting System. And we are currently working with the DMV and DOT to establish a system where we can instantaneously transmit that information between the different departments and agencies. It's going to reduce duplicative efforts, save staff time in different departments, and it does allow for the immediate access to the information. So this legislation just puts into the statute that ability and available for any questions.
Great. Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
I appreciate it, and I think it's a good idea. However, this is for a trooper, for those of us who might somewhere along the line get caught into a misinformation cycle. Let's just say something gets misapplied in this. How does somebody go back and try to challenge that, or are we going to create a problem there on somebody? Maybe a trooper put in something wrong. Maybe somebody reported something wrong. I don't know how it happens now, but I can see once it gets locked into the electronic world, you may not be able to get it back out. So maybe the sponsor can speak to it. I'm just wondering to make sure that I agree that government should work well, but I want it to serve the public well, too. So that's my concern.
Senator Machicki?
Certainly, Senator Coghill. Just as we've converted in this building to official record keeping, operator error is certainly possible. but also as correctable as it would be in a paper format. So I don't see it as a change on meeting record keeping requirements.
Lieutenant Dial, would you like to comment on that, the potential for error and how one would correct it?
Yes, Madam Chair. We actually see that this system will actually reduce errors because currently you have multiple agencies that are inputting the same information over and over again, and every time that somebody else gets their hands on that information, you increase the chances that you could get an error. Currently, if we did have a situation where an individual claimed that some information was erroneously put on a report, we could go through either the department or we can even take them up to the court if necessary and go through the process to get that information changed. It's not that hard to do. It is common, for example, when you have information such as a long VIN number with multiple digits to sometimes get that put in inaccurately. However, we do have methods. We can change that information, and we field public comments and requests to do that occasionally, and usually that's not a problem.
Okay.
Follow up anything?
No, thank you. I think that's all I was concerned about. DMV, we love to pick on DMV, but I have had constituents say that I got stopped by a trooper and found out I have a revoked license. I didn't even know it. And so these electronic things can happen a lot faster than sometimes we're aware. And it's just something I'm trying to keep closing the loop on, is how do we make sure that the people who are responsible are aware of their responsibility. And if there's a mistake made in electronic reporting, then how can they straighten that out and not find out, you know, 2 months down the road, 10 months down the road. So it's just how do we serve people well or hold them accountable well. So just thinking this thing through as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the benefits I see is accident reporting to the insurance company and expediting claims. If it can be done electronically, of course, that's a lot faster than waiting for the written report from the troopers or the city's police department. So. Further questions for the bill sponsor or invited testimony? Yes, Senator Kalko.
I'm full of questions today.
Yes, that's great.
I always look at applicability, and this is maybe for Annie. We're putting new requirements, safety barriers, basically, is what we're doing, it looks like to me, on sections 4 through 7, right? And it's on before or after. So can we reach back now those 10 years or how does this look?
Thank you. I really have glad I have a chance to answer this. And I did want to correct something. When I said I didn't draft this, I participated. So I'm responsible for a lot of the input. It was a group effort on the Department of Law doing this. I think that is a really good concern that I would like to look at further, because when you say it applies to offenses committed before, on, or after the effective date, I'm concerned that you're going back farther than I think the intent was, so that somebody who had a drunk driving conviction, for example, 3 years ago and now applies for a school bus license, you want it to apply to that conviction to apply, and so that the department can consider that conviction. But on the other hand, I don't know whether you want to go back 20 years and look at it or an offense that happened before a person was licensed and they are now acting as a school bus license. So I would like a chance to look at that and maybe talk to the sponsor on, and I hope I'm not speaking out of school as to what the sponsor would like on this concern. I just think it needs to be clear what you intend.
It's a concern I'm going to have as well. Mm-hmm. So, and I think if we can just work our way through it, that would be good.
Great. Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Machiki.
We'll spend some time on this. We'll be ready for the next meeting, and then hopefully we can, if there are any further questions, we'll have answers for that. And Senator Coghill, I'm happy to stop by and make sure you're satisfied with your questions as well, and we'll deal with the applicability question.
Right. And I figured I'd ask all the questions so that if we could keep it out of judiciary, as long as we understand all that we're doing here very clearly, and if this is appropriate to do, I'm willing to do that. So keep plugging away at this thing.
Good. Well, let's see if there's any folks that want to make public testimony on this. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on the bill? Okay, seeing no one, anyone online wishing to testify? All right. I'm going to leave public testimony open. I know that the chair of the committee would like to hold the bill over and probably has some questions himself. So thank you very much, Senator Machicki, and all the folks that testified. So we'll hold that over. Next bill on the docket is Senate Bill 174, Leases for Legislative Office Space. This bill is sponsored by Senator Wilkowski, and I know his staff is going to be presenting it. Is that correct, Senator?
Yes, thank you, right. Madam Chair.
Great.
I'll turn it over to Monica.
All right. Welcome, Monica.
For the record, my name is Monica Southworth, staff to Senator Wilkowski. Before you is Senate Bill 174. The short version of it is that it will add two sections that establish how the legislature will solicit public comment in the event it seeks a lease with payments in total that would exceed $250,000 for the entire lease, including renewal options. That's the short version. I gave you a pass out a sectional this morning, and I'll go over that. The first section amends, actually, Section AS 2420060, which is the powers of the Legislative Council. It includes reference to the two new sections, Section G and H, which are later in the bill. Section 2 adds the same references to Section G and Section H. And Section 3 adds in those Section G and H, which establishes how the legislature will seek comment. And that is a process. The process is 14 days before a public hearing. There will be a notice on the legislature's website. The legislature will hold a public hearing that will provide the public with information, including details on the space that will be leased, terms of the lease, and how much the lease will cost. This will allow members of the public to voice their concerns and ask questions of the legislature, and give the legislators an opportunity to respond to those questions and concerns. There's a requirement for teleconferencing abilities included in there to allow access across the state to all of the LIOs. And after the public hearing, it allows a 30-day comment period for the public to submit comments. This is a similar process in which regulation changes seek comments for regulation changes. And then Section H is a definition, and Section 4 adds the applicability section for the effective date.
Very good. Any questions? I see a zero fiscal note, correct?
Correct.
All right. Very good. Committee members, any questions? Yes, Senator Coghill.
So I think public comment is a great thing. So Section G was patterned after the regulation review process. Is that?
It's similar, yes.
Okay. So is this so we're talking about kind of a contracting issue over against a regulatory issue. Is there other contracts that are subject to this kind of review as well?
No, it's not common practice to have this public comment period, and I feel that it's an oversight, and that with these large leases, there should be public input, and the public should be allowed to review it to some extent. Obviously, there are executive sessions in which these contracts are discussed, but beyond that point, if the legislature is going to seek a contract, we believe that it should be, the public should have input on it.
I've been on judicial council, and I know things, we can be in executive session, but I don't know that I've ever seen the public refuse to have comment, but I don't know that I've ever really seen where we invited public comment either. So this would be a requirement is what you're trying to do here.
Right now, this only addresses the legislature entering into leases and not, it doesn't affect the judicial unless I'm getting that mistaken. No. It's my understanding that it's only with the legislature entering into the leases. And obviously, this does stem from the recent lease with the Anchorage Legislative Information Office, and we did include background information, and we're not trying to attack anyone on that issue, but given the number of calls to our offices, and I'm sure your offices received the same number of calls about the concern, we believe that this would be a great opportunity for both legislators and the public to have a conversation about these large expenditures. And again, it is over $250,000 over the term of the lease.
Yeah, not, and follow-up? I have not got the calls. I live in the Fairbanks area, so, but I have seen the news accounts of the conversation that's happened around the lease that is, the lease purchase that is going on in Anchorage at the legislative office. So I'm actually open to this discussion. You know, having the public input is probably a pretty important part of it. So so on a process issue, let's just kind of walk through how a process of this issue might go, because I know that we had kind of a proposal before us that was we went into the question of whether we should extend the lease or not, and then it ended up into a kind of an interesting purchase agreement. How would we go through a public comment period under the dynamics that this particular process happened? Do you envision that once there was a proposal, that that proposal needs to be put out for a public comment period for a certain time frame? Is that how I see this?
With the first lease that was related to the single source procurement with the owners of the Anchorage LIO, yes. So there would be a public hearing with, after that proposal was finalized. A public hearing would be decided, you have the 14-day notice period, the public hearing where the legislators, in this case the Legislative Council, would sit down and present with the with legislators and all the other parties, be able to sit down, have a presentation, hear public comment, address some of the concerns, which in this case I think it would have been very helpful for a lot of members of the public to have that opportunity instead of relying solely on the media for that outlet. That's my own personal opinion.
Your opinion is welcome here.
And then after the public hearing, have that 30-day comment period where it would be responded to.
Thank you, Monica. I want the record to reflect that Chair Dyson has joined us. Senator Dyson, we are on the third bill here today, Senate Bill 174, and we're being presented the bill by staff. Monica, are you aware of the discussion that took place in Legislative Council last night? There's been some modification of the lease. And so how would that modification, would that then, of course, be required to also go out for a 30-day public hearing and comment period, et cetera?
This bill only applies to single-source procurement of leases. And that my understanding of that entire process, and I listened to their meeting and thought that it was a very relevant meeting given this bill hearing. But my understanding is that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is going to go through a purchase process, and that entire process, there is funding that will need to be required, and there's going to be a bill that is will need to go through the legislature, and given the nature of the legislature, all of that will be subject to public comment throughout the legislative process. So this bill would not apply to what the Legislative Council is currently proposing.
Great. Thank you very much.
Any questions, committee members? Senator Coghill.
So the applicability at this point, certainly the proposal last night really did change the direction, but on or after, it would still, if they chose not to go through, say, the Alaska housing portion and were trying to do something else, then it would apply.
If they were to go back to the original plan, yes.
Yeah. I don't have that big of a problem with it.
All right. Anybody else wants to testify? Anybody online? All right, we'll take a brief at ease. On the record, is there any other items of business come before us today? Thank you all for your patience with me. I had two bills up in finance. we'll adjourn. It is about 13 minutes after the hour, after 10 on 18th of March, and thank you all.